WCCO Radio recently interviewed that popular author who claims that everything he has ever needed to know in life was taught to him in kindergarten. And he proceeds to explain that the rules in kindergarten had to do with respecting the rights of others and putting things back where you find them and being kind to one another, and that if all of life is lived that way, then that's all you need to know in life. And he even goes so far as to say that those rules would remedy all the problems we have internationally between states as well as individuals. The interview went on until it rambled into other subjects and eventually came around to the topic of Mother Teresa, that Nobel Prize-winning nun who in Calcutta, India, has given her life particularly to the care for the dying. So she and her co-workers will find those who are within hours of death on the litter-strewn streets of Calcutta and bring them in and clean them and let them die with some measure of dignity and minimal comfort. At any rate, this author proceeded to explain that he has great differences with Mother Teresa and named them right out, saying that he vehemently disagreed with her position on the role of women in the Roman Catholic Church and especially what she has to say about abortion. Then he said, But I have enormous respect for that lady because she does it. No matter where she is, she cares for and loves those that nobody else loves or cares about. In other words, he has great differences with her, but he respects her. Respects her because she has the kind of love that wins respect from other people. That's what St. Paul was talking about in 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 9 through 12. It is there that he writes these words. Now about brotherly love, we do not need to write you, for you yourselves have been taught by God to love each other. And in fact, you do love all the brothers throughout Macedonia. Yet we urge you, brothers, to do so more and more. Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your hands, just as we told you, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders and so that you will not be dependent on anybody. These words were not limited in their target audience to just the first century Greeks. They obviously are words for us as well, telling to us the message to love more and more. In these verses, the apostle author gives three descriptions of the kind of love that wins the respect of others. His first description in this simple outline is in verse 9. It is that of Christian love that is learned. For he understands that none of us is born with an intuitive understanding of Christian love, nor an inclination to do it. The fact is that we are born as sinners who are selfishly bent. So that even when we do things that are seemingly loving and kind, often it is with an agenda that is rooted in our own priorities rather than in the needs of others or in the example of Jesus Christ. Then, of course, a person becomes a Christian, and the old physical birth with its sin nature is replaced by a new spiritual birth with a spiritual nature. But that doesn't mean that we know how to love any better. We may have a new desire, in fact, we should, and we do, a new inclination to love as Jesus Christ loved, but still we don't know how to do it, because Christian love is learned. Look again at verse 9. Now about brotherly love, we do not need to write to you, for you yourselves have been taught by God to love each other. Christian love is taught by God, and it is something that is learned on the inside and then expressed on the outside. That means, then, that no pastor can stand in the pulpit, nor parent at home, nor Sunday school teacher in a classroom, and teach somebody how to really love as Jesus Christ did. They may be able to be examples and models, so that someone may look at another person and say, well, that's how it's done. But the real teaching is something that God does and does inside of a person. In fact, it's only God that can do it. Because our natural inclination is to love others primarily on the basis of their appearance, their behavior, and their relationship to us. But the love of Jesus Christ is a love which does not depend on how someone looks, nor depend upon how someone behaves, nor necessarily depend upon what the relationship is. It is a love that begins with the lover and is a choice. It is a choice to behave toward that other person in a way that is in that person's best interest. We need to be learners. If we're going to do it, if we're going to be like Jesus Christ in loving one another and then loving those who are not Christians, then we need to learn how to do it. I obviously cannot speak for you, but I can tell you about me. And I can tell you that I think, in all honesty, that I really want to be a lover like Jesus Christ. I want to do it as he does it. So I have a very deep desire. But I'm often ignorant, often don't know how to pull it off. So there are times when I really try to love other people and sometimes accomplish exactly the opposite of that which I originally intend. There are times when I seek to speak and to behave in kindness, and words come out that are terribly misunderstood. Or, worse yet, if not misunderstood, somehow in my doing of it, it slips over from the initial intent of loving kindness to an actual expression of unloving, unkindness. I find that I face situations where it's easier to hate than to love, and I struggle with the dilemmas where it seems that there are six choices and all the choices seem to be bad choices. And I don't have the resources. I'm not smart enough. I don't have enough experience to figure out how to do it. Not that I don't want to, but I just don't know how to actually do it. And so I need God to teach me. I need, like a first grader, to every morning go to the schoolhouse of God's love, and I need to sit there with really a childlike demeanor. And I need to listen, not speak, not tell. I need to be told. I need God to stand in front of me and to explain to me that this day, this is the way it's going to happen, and this day, this is the way it's going to be done. And then, from that classroom experience, I step out into the playground and have the recess, or the bell rings at the end of the class session, and I go out back to home, or back to the bus, or back to the neighborhood to play. And then I need to live out that which I have been taught, because I never could have figured it out myself. In fact, it's something that I need to learn even on the playground and in the neighborhood and back at the house. And then I discover that the lessons that I was taught yesterday are lessons that somehow don't always quite fit today. And so I need to go back to school, not just the 5 days of the week, but all seven. Holidays included, every day, on and on, being taught by God what it is like to love as Jesus loves. Every day, I must learn. Because Christian love is that which is learned from God on the inside before it ever is done on the outside. Who then are the recipients of this love that you and I are to learn from God? Well, an interesting Greek word is used in verse 9, and it's one of those few that is probably familiar to just about everyone here because it is the name that has been given to a famous eastern city. It is the actual Greek word Philadelphia, and it means brotherly love. Actually, the Greeks always used this, always, in their secular writing, to refer to the affectionate relationship between two birth brothers. It is St. Paul who christens the word with a Christian meaning and brings it into Scripture and says that that kind of affectionate love between birth brothers is to be a characteristic description of all Christians one to another, that we are to have Philadelphia, or brotherly love toward one another, so that the lessons that God is teaching us on the inside are then to be primarily, although not exclusively, lived on the outside with those who are fellow Christians. Sometimes we don't do it that way. Sometimes we don't treat other Christians with love. This week someone was telling me a bit of Canadian history that was a story quite unknown to me, telling me about the Battle of Quebec and how the British were seeking to take the city back from the French, And on the eve of the battle, as they got all of their artillery ready for the battle, the British general gave instructions for some target practice in preparation for the all-out battle. And he pointed to the statues of saints that were around the perimeter of the cathedral of the fortified city of Quebec and asked that the cannons be aimed to shoot the statues of the saints off the perimeter of the cathedral. And so, just before dark, the day before, all the artillery was so aimed, and they were very good shots, knocking off a head here and a body there and a few arms and chunks out of the cathedral in the process. Then they went to bed for the night and got ready for the battle the next day, only to discover that they had used all their ammunition shooting the saints. And as a result, they didn't have any left to fight the battle the next day. And if you've visited Quebec lately, you know that it is still a French-speaking city. Now, the point of that is so obvious that maybe I don't have to say it, that we as Christians are not to use all of our artillery shooting at one another, who are the saints. But rather, we are to save our artillery for shooting the enemy. And that we are to Philadelphia, we are to have brotherly love, one for the other. The second description of the kind of love that wins respect is in verse 10. It is the description that Christian love is done. In verse 10, the little English word do, D-O, appears twice. And it tells us that love, Christian love, is primarily something that is done. Paul writes, "And in fact, you do love all the brothers throughout Macedonia, yet we urge you, brothers, to do so more and more." Christian love is far more than something that we feel. In fact, there may be persons that we don't much feel like loving, maybe even don't even particularly like, and yet we do love to them. Now, I'm not sure whether that is in some instances more difficult or in some instances easier. We may say it is very difficult to do something that is kind and loving towards someone that I don't have an emotional affection for. And so my choice would be to adjust my emotions and then have my behavior in accord with my emotions. And let me suggest that that is the standard non-Christian approach. And if we can't get around to adjusting our emotions, then we can legitimately not behave in a loving way toward others. That's not the Christian love that is talked about in the New Testament. Christian love in the New Testament is primarily behavioral. That we do love toward others, whether we have that emotional affection or not. Independent of that person's appearance, independent of that person's behavior, independent of that person's relationship with us. We do love. And that is precisely what Jesus did. He did it. He healed people who in many cases were ingrates. They didn't even care. They didn't even thank him for the healing that he gave. He took Judas into his inner circle of a dozen apostles, knowing far in advance that Judas would betray him with a kiss. And yet he loved him nonetheless. Jesus, when he died on the cross, actually died a loving death for the very people who hammered the nails into his hands and feet and put him up there to die. It was a behavioral love which did love. Are you doing that? Are you doing love for other Christians and for other people? Now, a lot of faces here that are very familiar to me, so I think I know a great deal about those of us who are here. And I think the answer is yes. I think that if St. Paul were writing to the Wooddalers instead of the Thessalonians and writing in 1988 instead of AD 51, that he would say pretty much the same thing, maybe even choose some stronger language. I think that he would pretty much say, "You're doing it. It's great, fantastic. You are living out that love. You're doing it to one another. It can be seen all over." But he would probably add for all of us precisely what he added for the Thessalonians, and that is, keep on doing it more and more. Commendation, but also continuation. Because Christian love is doing. The third description of the kind of love that wins respect is in verses 11 and 12. Now, to understand this, we have to realize that there was some background going on that isn't fully explained. That the people in Thessalonica did not fully have their teaching concerning the second coming of Jesus Christ. And there were those who said that on certain dates or a very near date, the second coming of Jesus Christ would occur. Some of the Thessalonians got so caught up in this teaching that they quit their jobs. And when the dates that were predicted passed, they, as every generation has tended to do, came up with some later dates. And eventually, these people who were not working became dependent on other Christians. In fact, probably told them that it was their responsibility, from their refund, from their resources and funds, to actually provide for the ones that weren't working. Not a great deal different than what happened a few weeks ago here in the United States, where there were those who were giving 88 reasons why the second coming of Christ has to be in 1988, and were predicting a certain date in September. A lot of these things happening. There were people across the United States that quit their jobs, went and sat up on mountains and did all kinds of things that were rather bizarre compared to their previous behavior, all because the return of Jesus Christ was to happen at a certain specific time. Now, out of that background, the apostle writes in verses 11 and 12, this is what you should do. Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business and to work with your hands, just as we told you, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders and so that you will not be dependent on anybody. In this is a powerful truth for today. The truth that the Bible is here telling us that the kind of lives we live are really our preparation for the return of Jesus Christ, and especially in our work. That we are to have jobs, that we are to have income, and that we are to be responsible in the behavior that we have in relationship to employment as an outworking of what Christian love is all about and as an anticipation of the return of Jesus Christ. In other words, he's saying, God primarily calls us not to flamboyance in terms of Christ's coming, but rather that we are to live simple, straightforward lives of employment, of hard work, of honest relationships, of personal integrity, and of love. Quiet, ongoing, consistent love. And it is in these that we best love God and one another. I conclude with two stories. Story number one comes from the early days of New England, where there was, in that generation, a popular notion that the end of the world was soon to take place and the return of Jesus Christ was to happen. The story is told by Patterson Smythe of a New England gathering where the church at noon, in that charged atmosphere of expectancy, had a natural phenomenon take place where the sky darkened at noon. And there were those who stood up in that assembly and said, Christ is coming back right now. It is the end of the world. And the concern and the fervor and the expectancy, all of which had been built up, grabbed the people. It was then that an old godly man who was the president of that assembly stood up and quieted them down and said, bring in the candles. Bring in the candles so that we can do our work. Then he added, if the Lord is coming, how better can he find us than quietly doing our duty? Now, the point of this story is simple. It is the point that the best way to love others and the best way to live for Jesus Christ is to live love, and that our work, what we do on an ongoing basis, is the most important way that we can do it. Second story, a lot more recent. The way I heard it, a pastor of a church heard that the way to do things at church is to have a children's sermon on Sunday morning. So he came back to his church, and week after week in the Sunday morning worship service, he had a sermon just for children. Usually adults like them a lot better than the regular sermon. But anyway, on this particular Sunday, he asked all the young children to come up. So they all came up in the platform. You know, he got down in their level, and he said to them, all right, I'm thinking of something. I'm thinking of something that's furry and has a big bushy tail and scampers along the ground and has buck teeth and climbs up trees and eats nuts. Now, who knows what I'm thinking of? And this little girl with no front teeth raised her hand. And she said, you know, very carefully she had thought all this through. She said, it sounds like a squirrel, but I'm sure it's Jesus. Now, there's a point to this story, too. And the point is simple. See, she knew, week after week, that every story always ended up with Jesus. And so she figured that no matter what anybody said or what happened, that the story always ended up with Jesus. But that's the way we ought to live. Every week, every story, everything that happens ought to end up with Jesus. That we live life for Jesus. That we really do it. The kind of love that wins respect. That we learn it, that we do it, that we live it. And we do it and learn it and live it more and more and more.